Broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network, this is Cultural Baggage.
Not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
My name is Dean Becker. Steve Nolan is our engineer. We invite you to join us as we examine the unvarnished truth about the drug war. This week, the mothership of the Drug Truth Network is doing pledge drive, so we're sending out this special edition to the affiliates about John Walters, the drug czar of the Americas.
The line that's been presented to Americans as well as Canadians is marijuana is not a serious drug of abuse. That's not true. You can't be addicted to marijuana. That's not true. That's archaic views of what marijuana was left over from the Cheech and Chong years of the 70s. Today, we have to not be subject to reefer madness.
A couple of weeks ago, John Walters came to my hometown of Houston, Texas, to talk about drugs, gangs, and violence. Throughout his presentation, you could hear the calls of liar and are you a doctor emanating from the audience.
Most adults my age, most adults in the community, simply think marijuana is the soft drug. Of the 7 million people we have to treat today, over 60% need that treatment because of their use and abuse of marijuana. It is the single greatest cause of treatment need in the United States today. Nationally, more teenagers seek treatment for marijuana dependency than for all other illegal drugs combined. And for the last several years, more seek treatment for marijuana dependency as teenagers than alcohol, which did not used to be the case. Despite our efforts against alcohol, its greater pervasiveness and the ambiguousness of society was a reason why we had more young people using. This is not to denigrate the danger you see from meth, this version of prescription pharmaceuticals, heroin, or cocaine. But when you look at the problem and deal with young people seriously, and you look at the pathways to dependency and abuse, we cannot rest with the old view that marijuana is somehow a gateway. It's a dead end for increasing percentages of teenagers today based on the kind of product it is today. In addition, it is a factor because these users are not 17, 16, 18, 19. Average age of first use of marijuana today in many communities, and the average nationally is 13, 14, and many it's 12, 11, and 10. It's not just a gateway. It's a dead end. And we have to educate ourselves and be clear with young people about what needs to be done, both in the classroom and at home. Young people get very confusing messages from our culture. They believe, and I think you know this if you talk to them seriously, that despite what we tell them when they're younger, that this is a dangerous thing they ought not to be involved in, that the dirty little secret about growing up in America as you get older and more aware is the culture expects you or accepts experimentation with dangerous addictive substances as a part of coming of age in the United States. That when they're in a group of their peers and someone starts using or expresses the desire to use, they will be the deviant if they say, I think that's wrong, or I don't want to. We understand how this problem spreads. When a young person breaks the boundary of prevention and begins to use, they do not do it secretly with their friends. They usually aggressively bring that behavior back to their friends, encouraging them to partake with them, to be part of a new experience. It begins with what I call the lie. It's fun. You can handle it. Everybody does it. Because if you think about addiction as a disease, we have to understand that what drug abuse is in the United States today, what addiction in the United States is today, is a pediatric onset disease. It starts in childhood with young people who are asymptomatic, with people who are bringing back a behavior which they claim by their own example is not harmful, because it doesn't happen immediately. But today, the short period from experimentation to more involved, dangerous, and destructive behavior is narrower.
We need to both talk to young people about that, educate ourselves about that, work as a community to reinforce that information, and also work as a community to supervise and give healthy outlets, as Congressman said. We're trying to support some of those overall efforts in society with the media campaign Leader DeLay referred to. I'd like to close by showing you a couple of brief spots that we've done. Some of you may have seen. The campaign is divided into two parts. One, getting messages to adults about the importance that they have in their children's lives. The other, directly trying to educate young people about this danger and the danger to them and their friends.
So Then the Drug Czar played a couple of those one-minute pieces. You've seen them. That tries to equate use of marijuana with funding Osama bin Laden and so forth. Then he closed his speech with this little bit here before he answered questions from the audience.
This is no more than our effort to try to provide some support for what you do as a community. I close by thanking you for what you and the people leading this community do every day, because we know you save the lives, you put back together those who are hurting and sick, and we couldn't ask for better partners. We try to be true to what you're doing and be supportive of that common effort.
In that these lies of John Walters are quite horrifying and depressing, I think it appropriate that we play a little marijuana music. More horror in a minute. Rather imagine that he inhaled at least once. Anyway, the horror, the horror. Following Walter's speech, they allowed for questions from the audience, and my good friend John tried to set forth some ground rules for the further discussion.
Let us try to be civil, let us try to talk with integrity, and let's talk about protecting our children from drugs. There are a lot of people who have very opposing views, very strong views. And if we can do that, maybe we can get somewhere tonight. The problem, as I see it, in this country is not the fact that drugs are here. They have always been here. The problem is prohibition. We tried it with alcohol. All we did was make Al Capone literally a billionaire. Every year, there are tens of thousands of children who are not only taking drugs, they are involved in the business of drugs as couriers, in sales, and as lookouts. My rhetorical question to you is, when was the last time you were served a beer by a 13-year-old in a bar? It's ridiculous. The very image is silly. And the reason is, our country has decided that alcohol is a bad thing, but if it is regulated, controlled, and kept from our children, it is harder for them to get. Now, household surveys across the country for years have shown that it is harder for children to get alcohol than it is to get pot. The reason is any pusher will sell anything to anybody. But a person who is a businessman, who has to pay taxes, who has an establishment, who can be held accountable by the men in blue, he will not serve children, or he will strive not to. Isn't this analogy perfectly legitimate for something like marijuana? Can't we decide that you don't, even if you don't like marijuana, even if you don't like what it does to people, yes, it turns people into lazy couch potatoes. But A, does putting them in prison actually solve the problem, or just brutalize them? And does prohibition do anything more than make tens of millions of Americans criminals? Does it make anything more than the people who deal it rich? And does it occasionally make for that tragic situation where bystanders are killed over, A, either the commerce in this incredibly lucrative business, or an accidental police shootouts when, unfortunately, the police make mistakes? Could you please comment on that, Mr. Walters?
This is the argument about, well, shouldn't we just legalize drugs because the prohibition is worse than the problem? I think it's based on a couple of false assumptions, so let me just deal with those first. It is true that recently we've had greater problems with marijuana and causing treatment need for young people, but alcohol is the second, and in some ways, in some communities, the largest cause of treatment need among substances of abuse. Our effort to control alcohol in the country's had a disagreement over time. No question about it. We've allowed it. We've tried to control it. We've allowed it. We've tried to control access by young people. We aren't very good at that. We aren't very good at controlling access of cigarettes to young people either. And as a result, while I understand what you're saying is prohibition makes it worse, but again, the slides I showed you is 19 million Americans use an illegal drug once a month or more frequently. Almost 40 to 50 million smoke cigarettes once a month or more frequently. And almost 120 million use alcohol once a month or more frequently. You have to assume that the ending of this would approach greater use. We would allow it. It would be more widespread. What would the country look like if instead of as bad as 19 million users are, we had 40 or 100 million users. As I said, also, marijuana is not a peripheral problem of abuse. Of the 7 million people we have to treat, over 60% are dependent on marijuana. In addition, yes, the crime that's involved with this is serious, but the presumption that many people tell people that they want to have legalized, I'm not saying you did this, you may have heard this from somebody else, that our jails and prisons are full of those people who are simply drug users, there's no reality to that claim. The increase in the prison population, which we all regret because we love our freedom, the increase in the prison population, largely the largest section of the state prison system, has been fed by violent crime. The contribution that drugs makes to crime, and dealers do make a lot of contributions to crime, but the single biggest contribution that drugs makes to crime is the behavior that it's catalytic in causing violence and abuse. 80% of our child abuse and endangerment cases involve a parent or guardian who is a substance abuser. Alcohol is a considerable factor in this exactly the same way. But to make an argument that because we already have a problem containing something that we have, for better or worse, decided to contain, we ought to uncontain all the other problems given what we see about marijuana is, I believe, not responsible, certainly not supported by the vast majority of the population. And finally, if the argument is a lot of people go to jail because they're simply possessing drugs, that's also, I know, a frequently repeated, so therefore considered to be a factual statement, claim. Think of it this way. Nobody likes in law enforcement, and nobody in any serious way locks up kids. Nobody makes a career out of slam dunking a 15-year-old with a baggie of marijuana in their jeans. But we do have serious problems of crime and abuse. And we do have young people at younger and younger ages with addiction that get involved in crime and come into juvenile drug courts. And in that case, those drug courts try to get them assessed and get them treatment.
The criminal justice system has done things you can be proud of as an American, in taking people who are sick, primarily, and not a violent threat, and getting them the help they need and helping to see that they take advantage of that help.
I'm giving you much of this discussion because I want to give somewhat of a fair shot to John Walters, even though he refuses to give me any shot at his assertions. I'll have more about that as we close out the program, but right now it's time to play Name That Drug. Good luck.
It's time to play Name That Drug by its side effects. Blistering or peeling skin, swelling of eyelids, throat and lips, blurred of vision and yellowing of eyes, black, tarry stools, vomit that looks like coffee grounds. Time's up. The answer, Celebrex.
Another FDA-approved product.
Okay, let's say drug prohibition does support terrorism.
And murder.
And murder.
Torture.
And torture.
Corruption. Bribery.
And whatever.
What's your point?
Change the law.
I gotcha. Make it cheap. More available. Everywhere. Like soda or cheesy puffs.
Exactly.
Cocaine at the playground. Crack stands at the laundromat. Heroin at the mini-mart. Like that?
Face it, old man. That's what we've got now.
To learn more, visit the Marijuana Policy Project, MPP.org.
I don't know about you, but I didn't hear any direct response from John Walters to my friend John's assertions. U.S. Representative Tom DeLay had been the one who sponsored this seminar on drugs, crime, and violence, and here he doesn't respond to my friend John's question either.
And I might just answer your analogy. I don't agree with your analogy. Alcohol is every day easier. Children are having access to alcohol easier every day as the days go by. The age of drinking is lowering because alcohol is more accessible to our children. And the number one killer of our children is drinking and driving. So there is an impact to the use of these substances, and it has a very real impact on the lives of our children and our society.
So I want to put my two cents worth into this discussion, if you will. Each year, here in the U.S., we arrest 1.6 million of our fellow citizens for little baggies they're carrying around in their pocket. Over 700,000 of those arrests are for the possession of marijuana. A recent guest on the Cultural Baggage Show was Warden Richard Watkins of the Holiday Prison Unit, and here's what he had to say.
Prohibition has not worked. I mean, our prisons are getting more filled each day. We have people who are incarcerated that don't need to be incarcerated because of the prohibition, and this so-called war on drugs is, it would be funny if it were not so serious.
In your experience, what percentage of prisoners come in either for having had drugs in their possession or stealing to support a drug habit?
I heard figures later yesterday that comes closer to 90%, but I would suspect, and I don't have the firm figures on this, because I don't think the figures are actually being kept. I would suspect somewhere over 80% of offenders who come into Texas prisons come because directly of drug violations or other violations that have been precipitated through their drug use and their need for drugs.
Here's part of a speech I gave to the Houston City Council following the drug czar's visit to our town, as well as the day that Emily Riley, the city councilwoman and former mayor of Santa Cruz, spoke to them on behalf of medical marijuana.
I want to start with a bit of a history lesson. In the early 1920s and culminating in 1937 with the Federal Marijuana Tax Act, a propaganda war was waged primarily by one man, our nation's first drug czar, Harry J. Anslinger. Now, up till that point in time, cannabis was legal, available over the counter, and economically priced. You could buy hash candy bars, highly potent cannabis, and refined tinctures of cannabis. There were no drug gangs. There was no drug gang violence, few overdose deaths, and very few children using drugs. Hemp was grown in the back 40. Cannabis medicines were used by humans and livestock alike. Mr. Anslinger told Congress and the American people there was a new threat, a menace, that would lead our children to insanity, criminality, and death. Saying it came from south of the border, He named this threat marijuana. Through a comprehensive media attack through the Hearst newspapers and movies like Reefer Madness and The Terrible Truth, the people were convinced that marijuana must be banned, never realizing that Anslinger was talking about the hemp and cannabis they had grown and used for generations. Last Thursday, the current reigning drug czar, John Walters, was in town to talk about kids, drugs, and gangs. He told us that marijuana is now twice the danger of heroin, in fact, the most dangerous drug problem in our nation. Walters says marijuana has become so powerful and potent that we can no longer call it marijuana. Hemp, cannabis, marijuana, and now the drug formerly known as marijuana. And I'm asking all of you to please investigate the truth of this matter. Sometimes snake oil salesmen wear $1,000 suits and live in Washington, D.C. Every day, doctors over at MD Anderson Hospital, and I hear this on a weekly basis from the patients and the doctors have to recommend, they have to whisper to these patients that if you want to live, find yourself some marijuana. And I think this is something that should be of great concern to this city council. It's something that should be made available cheaply and easily to these people who need it so desperately and who are forbidden by threat of prison to do so.
Drug warrior John.
The people like George Soros, who is with several other people, have funded campaigns to change state laws to legalize drugs. They believe we'll have a better society if more people have access to drugs.
Medical marijuana.
Let me finish. I thought we had some ground rules from your friend over here. What young people are led to believe is not only that this is acceptable, but there's something about kind of showing you're independent from authority that's now tied up with drug use for many of them. Now, you can have some arguments about whether there are trends and this and that, but the claim that this is not dangerous, the claim that we're locking up kids who simply are guilty of possession, the claim that because you called a couple of your friends and they said, hey, my marijuana is the same as it's always been, but that is the same as multi-year scientific research analyzing seized data. No, but I'm responsible for talking to scientists and doctors. But also, look, here's the fundamental lie. Here's the fundamental lie that I point out to you. Go to the Legalizer website. Go to the website for High Times magazine. It's clear that the people who use marijuana believe it's more potent. They are marketing higher varieties. They are telling you how to find the more potent varieties. So the people who advocate this that want to claim, oh, no, we believe it's all the same, it's belied by the very culture that is, we have and you should look for the following characteristics to find higher potency marijuana. And the government does these surveys in a systematic way so that we can have data.
What's better, two hits of hydro or two joints of Mexican? Next at the seminar came a girl who claimed to be a high school student, and try though she might, she just couldn't bring herself to actually cry. Here's her testimony.
You were talking about prevention programs here in the Fort Bend ISD. Well, had the Fort Bend ISD been implementing that in the schools? Because I have friends that are smoking marijuana in school during lunch, okay, and then coming to class high and doing whatever, because I'm a student and I'm kind of scared. If they're going to do that now, what if half the student body is smoking pot in class? Is it going to move to that? Am I going to have the security? I know we have officers in school, but if half of the student body if there are five students in my class that are high coming to chemistry, I mean, what can we expect?
So a few minutes later, it was my turn at the microphone to ask the drug czar to be a guest on my radio shows. That was my question. But at that very moment, Congressman Tom DeLay took the podium and said the meeting was closed. So I then walked over and tried to speak to the drug czar as he sat in the chair for a moment, but his agents gathered around him, all with earpieces behind their ears, bulging coats, you know the type, and they prevented me from talking to the man. I offered my business card. None of the agents would take it. The drug czar stood up, his agents gathered around him, and he left the building, looking much like John Gotti leaving a play. For 3 years now, I have tried to get the director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, the drug czar, or even the attorney general to come on this show and explain to us the need for an eternal war on our own people. And, of course, you haven't heard them as of yet. Here's a summary of some email exchange I did with the Office of National Drug Control Policy over the last few weeks. I've done this about a dozen times before, but this time I started on July 23rd. This was addressed to the drug czar John Walters, care of his press secretary, Jennifer De Valance of the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy. Subject: Time's up for the drug war. I'm having a difficult time in getting an interview with anyone dedicated to further enforcement of the drug prohibition laws. I understand that you see great harms in marijuana, more so than with heroin or cocaine, at a time when many are calling for reform of all these laws, more especially so in regards to marijuana. Will you, Mr. Walters, or your designate from the ONDCP, please make yourself available for up to a half hour to discuss the recent Reuters release, which indicates that, according to you, Mr. Walters, the more potent pot of today has become a major threat to our society. I told them how our programs air on 14 stations in the U.S. and Canada, to include Houston, San Francisco, Boulder, Knoxville, and Eugene, Oregon. I told them I may not have the clout of Limbaugh or the listenership of Hannity, but my shows are among the top draws for scientists, doctors, and lawyers looking for the latest information about the mechanisms of the drug war. I told them my guests have included Milton Friedman, a Nobel laureate, Congressman John Conyers, and the CEO of GW Pharmaceuticals, Dr. Jeffrey Guy. We have interviewed well over 100 politicians, scientists, district attorneys, authors, policemen, former DEA agents, wardens, doctors, prisoners, patients, and providers. I offered them 6 different ways they could participate: a live debate between Mr. Walters and an associate, and me and an associate, or, if not team versus team, then just Mr. Walters and I; if not live, then a debate as described above, recorded; if not a debate or live, then a pre-recorded discussion between myself and Mr. Walters. Failing that, I would send a list of questions in advance with no follow-up questions, a simple recorded Q&A, and lastly, if no recording was to be done, I would send some questions via email for them to answer. I told them my audience and I would await their word. On August 2nd, I sent them additional emails to include this plea that, quote, "We both want to get these drugs out of the hands of criminals. Let's share our thoughts with my listeners," end quote. On August 3rd, I said, "The day we regulate the distribution of these drugs to adults is the day we destroy Osama's profits in Afghan opium." I asked them to define their parameters, that I would respect them and invite them and their experts back for further discussions. On August 3rd, I heard from Jennifer, and she said, "While we will be unable to accommodate your request, we wish well in your future endeavors." I closed the correspondence by stating, "Your organization's silence in defending the drug war speaks volumes." Next week's guest, Dr. Claudia Jensen, who's also a professor at USC, who prescribes medical marijuana to children with ADD. I close today's show by stating that because of the lies of men like John Walters, you don't know what's in that bag. Please be careful. For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.
Tap dancing on the edge of an abyss.